Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Empowering Family Caregivers on Blog Talk Radio. This is Susan Baida, the co-founder of eCareDiary.com and your host for today's show. Welcome. We are holistic medicine. In so many we visit our doctors and we can't comprehend why we cannot find, cures or relief from whatever pains and ailments we are experiencing. And I often have heard so many stories about how holistic medicine has really changed people's lives. So I am so pleased to introduce our distinguished guest, Dr. Gail Lowenstein. She is the founder and coordinator of Complementary and Alternative Medicine Group. The acronym is CAM, Complementary and Alternative Medicine, and it's a group. And she also runs Elder Life Options Group for physicians, healthcare professionals, as well as lay people. And these groups focus on a unique practice of concierge physician home visit medicine. She also founded and coordinates Using Your Mind Learning Group. It's a forum specifically for lay people. And she is a board certified in internal medicine, geriatrics, hospice and palliative medicine, holistic medicine, and has added qualifications in functional medicine. So we'll learn more about that later on. Dr. Lowenstein is currently writing a book entitled Taking Control of Your Health and Your Life, The Holistic Journey of a Western Trained MD. Dr. Lowenstein, thank you and welcome to our show.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, so let's cut right to the chase. So how did a Western-trained allopathic physician get involved with holistic medicine? Tell us your story.
Well, my holistic journey actually started in 1998. Like so many Western-trained physicians that get involved with holistic medicine, I got sick, and Western medicine was not able to fully help me. And if you look at all the different holistic doctors, like Mark Hyman, who's he wrote Ultra Metabolism. He's very prominent. He got sick, then he learned how to heal himself, and then that's how he got into holistic and alternative medicine and functional medicine. And that was my story. My knees began to hurt, and no one knew why. I went to an internal medicine doctor, rheumatologist, orthopedist. No one had a clue. The orthopedist was saying, hobble around for a couple of weeks. If it doesn't get better, we'll do arthroscopy. And that was something I didn't want to do. I really did not want a procedure just to explore, to find out what's going on. The MRI was inconclusive. So Western medicine did not know what was going on with me. Someone happened to say to me that they knew a Chinese acupuncturist who helped someone else with a similar problem. So I went, and it was really very scary to me. I went to Flushing in the Chinese neighborhood. I was the only Caucasian. And I went to his apartment, which is where he was treating people, and I was the only one there. So I'm alone with a Chinese man in an apartment, just the two of us. No receptionist, no one else. And I hobbled in. I mean, I really was incapacitated. I couldn't even drive. I took a taxi there. Yeah. And the point is, I walked out better than I walked in. And for the first time, I had hope that I actually was going to heal. Do you understand that feeling of no one knows what's the matter with you, and you're in pain, and you don't know what else to do? He helped me. It was Dr. Young in Flushing. He's a licensed acupuncturist. He's a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner and herbologist. And it was, for me, like a miracle. Finally, I found someone who could help me. So he ended up...
I'm a big fan of our acupuncture, so I'm not surprised by this story, but I'm sure a lot of people can relate to what you're talking about.
It was so amazing to me, so amazing that Western medicine had no idea, and this Chinese man knew what to do. So for the first time in my life, I wrote a grant. I at this point was chief medical officer of a nursing home, the Margaret Teats Nursing and Rehabilitation Center in Jamaica, Queens.
Yes.
And so it was a nursing home that started for Holocaust survivors. And
yes.
So I wrote a grant, and I got it. That was shocking in itself. I never wrote a grant before, and I got it. I got the grant.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I was able to bring Dr. Young into the nursing home with the grant support to treat our patients. And the first grant that I wrote was to use him when Western medicine was unsuccessful. And the first patient he saw, he made a miracle. It was like this. My mouth is open as I'm like saying these things, that what he was able to do. It was a patient who had, it's called stasis ulcers, which means his circulation in the legs was
mm-hmm.
were very bad, and he had ulcers all over the legs for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Western medicine were piddling around, doing a little this, and nothing was really working. He came into the nursing home, and Dr. Young put on a special salve. He says it has a formula that is secret, that the Chinese government doesn't allow anyone to know, and it's what the soldiers take along if they get wounded. So we don't even
mm-hmm.
know what he put on this man, but the point is it healed. In a few weeks, it healed. 10 years of Western medicine, nothing worked. In a few weeks, this man was healed. And he did.
These are incredible.
It was incredible. Absolutely incredible.
And examples. And I want to ask you, so these are great examples, but tell us, I mean, what are some major differences between Western and holistic medical practices?
When you say holistic, that has many different meanings.
Mm-hmm.
For me, holistic medicine is body, mind, and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Western medicine is physical. They separate, and then there's the emotional, which goes to the psychiatrist
mm-hmm.
and the psychologists. They really don't talk about spiritual. In my training, I had nothing about spiritual at all. We had very little about nutrition. I went to the Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis. We had 2 hours of nutrition in the entire 4 years. And that was only about the nutritional deficiency disorders, not about how
mm-hmm.
to eat a proper diet. So for me, holistic medicine is when you pull together and you interconnect them. So, for example, there are books by Louise Hay. She wrote Heal Thy Body, and she talks about
Oh, yes. I know. I'm very familiar
she's
with
amazing.
Her. Yeah.
She talks about
yeah.
every time I have a physical symptom, I look it up to see what does it mean psychologically, because some people believe that every physical ailment is a physical manifestation of an emotional disorder.
Yes.
Whether you want to
mm-hmm.
believe it or not, it's very empowering to believe it. So,
yes.
for example, whenever I get sick, I get a cold. It's because
mm-hmm.
she says it in the book, you are feeling overwhelmed. And
mm-hmm.
so it's a time for me to say to myself, okay, I was feeling overwhelmed. Now I'm sick. Now I have the power to transmute that into something positive. I could take a physical ailment and say, I'm going to make it into something positive by learning
yeah.
emotionally how to better myself. And
yeah.
so I put into place positive, I get more sleep, I talk to myself with affirmations, go with the flow of life, don't let this get
mm-hmm.
to you, whatever, and I'm able to see every illness now in a positive way.
That's wonderful. Holistic sounds like it's much more multidimensional than Western medicine, it sounds.
Oh,
and it sounds like, and based on some of the, and I want to remind the audience or inform the audience about your website. It's GailMD.com, GailMD.com. And in one of your, case studies, you talk about, one of your patients who essentially, you gave him a new dietary treatment. And I just find that the element of nutrition and emotional and physical is so important, and that in treatment of the whole body as opposed to maybe just the specific ailment that, one might be experiencing, and that's what happens in Western medicine. You go to, a specific doctor whereas maybe that, you know, that ailment comes from a whole range of other issues, you know, going on elsewhere in your body. But anyway, I want to go back to asking you about your program, the holistic program you developed. Tell us about it.
Well, when you say the holistic program I developed, you mean at the Margaret Heath Center?
Well, no, tell us about your foundation.
There is a not-for-profit foundation called the New York Foundation for Elder Care that has graciously, for the past 5 years, funded me to teach classes. For about 4 or 5 of those years, I was teaching healthy aging for young and old the holistic way. This is a 10-week course where people got their lives back. People with chronic migraines, with fibromyalgia, they would come to my classes and they would go on a food plan. And the concept that I taught in the classes is when you take control of what you think and what you eat, you take control of your life and your health. And the people who really came to the classes and worked the program truly got their lives back. I'd say about 80 to 85% of all their symptoms disappeared just by coming to classes. The remaining symptoms, they needed to fine-tune working privately with a holistic practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I started these classes is I'm going to go back to how my journey, my holistic journey. So I said how I was working with a Chinese medicine practitioner.
Yes.
He came to the nursing home. I wrote 3 grants in a row, and he was able to stay at the nursing home. He's still there, actually. I'm not, but he is. And so,
and I'd like to just tell the audience quickly that you were the chief medical officer at the Margaret Peets Nursing and Rehabilitation Center for 24 years, correct?
Yes, correct.
You were there for 23 years, and so this was, I mean, a huge feat to A, get the grant and bring in these new practices into the center.
Yes, and I must give a lot of credit to the president, the CEO president, who allowed these innovative programs to flourish. I mean, if you didn't have someone who was backing you on this, it never would have worked. So we were really cutting edge in our day. And I developed 3 programs there. One was the palliative care program.
Mm-hmm.
How I started that program was we introduced hospice into the facility. The care that hospice gave was unbelievably great. And it became clear to me that those who didn't qualify for hospice were not getting this fantastic service. So I used the physician assistant who was working at my facility. I trained her up in palliative medicine, and she became the director of my palliative care program. The whole point was it was a palliative care program, comfort care, that means, for those who don't qualify for hospice. We maintained them in the facility. We kept them comfortable. When they made definition for hospice, they went on hospice. We put them on hospice very early. So they
Could you quickly define the difference between hospice and palliative care, just for our audience?
Sure.
A lot of us are not really specifically familiar with those terms.
Hospice is a Medicare, a government-sponsored agency that practices palliative care.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only distinction. There are set criteria for, since the government is paying for it, the government made up criteria on who should qualify, and they require that you have a 6-month prognosis. Now, are we God? Do we know when you're going to die? No. But we can make an educated guess. And most people, or many people, believe that you go on hospice the week before you die. And that's not what the program is about. It's 6 months. And so we would put people on hospice, and they would get better because they were getting all these enhanced care from the hospice staff. They would get better. They no longer met criteria for hospice, and they went off hospice. And then when they declined again, they went on hospice, on and off of hospice for years. The best time to go on hospice is when you're not sure you need it. I'm going to say that again. It's that important. The best time to go on hospice is when you're not sure you need it. It's up to the hospice to determine whether or not they feel that you qualify. And you don't need to have cancer to go on hospice. All you need is a doctor to say that if your disease follows the normal course, it would not be surprising if you weren't alive in 6 months.
Right.
So we use that criteria in the nursing home to put about 10% of our patients we put on hospice.
Mm-hmm.
And the other people who did not qualify for hospice, possibly because they were now on a Medicare stay at the nursing home, so financially they didn't qualify. I'm going to give you an example.
Right.
It was a particular patient who did die, and she didn't even know that it was because of her that I decided to make a palliative care program. She had dementia. She was a long-term care patient, and she had a perforated the intestines. Something went terribly wrong with her intestines. She ended up in the hospital, came back in a miserable state, a horrible quality of life, and the family said, I don't want her to ever be hospitalized again. I want you to keep her here and make her comfortable. The thing is, our doctors, our nurses, were not trained on how to do that. That's fascinating, isn't it? They were not trained. And so I developed the palliative care program where I trained up the physician assistant, and I had I hired a special social worker who worked part-time at the at a hospice. She worked for me also in the nursing home for the palliative program. And eventually we even had our own nursing assistants that worked for my program, and we gave them kind, loving comfort care. And when they qualified either clinically or financially for hospice, we put them on hospice. So back and forth they went. And that is the vision I have, to develop such a program in the community. Right now what I do is I make home visits. And for those,
and how does this relate to the practice of holistic medicine? What is the connection here with
still body, mind,
vision
and spirit? See, what I did in the nursing home, I had the palliative care program, a medication reduction program, and the integrative medicine program. And I pulled them all together, called them holistic program, because what they share in common is body, mind, and spirit. We're not in palliative medicine, we're not treating the disease, we're treating the patient. We're constantly weighing benefits versus burden of treatments.
Right.
We're
right.
treating the patient and the family as one unit. So that's why all the three, the medication reduction program is, I got grant support for that. We looked at non-pharmacological alternatives to medication, and we made a huge difference in reducing the number of medications the patients were on.
And that's and you know, that's one of the biggest issues today, and why I think, I know that the research has been done on why there have been so many hospitalizations amongst elders is the number of medication and medication mismanagement. So I would imagine that the work you're doing in reducing medications, I'm sure, enhances.
Any change in an elderly person, medication, 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 that's something that your audience should realize. You're taking care of an elderly person, and now they're stable, and then they're no longer stable. Look to your medication first. Was there a change in the medication? And very often, you will, even with younger people, you will find that medication can be doing more harm than good. However, there is a major role for medication. I'm not against all medication. It's but you want to carefully consider what medication does the person truly benefit from, and what medication does the person need which is in line with their goals of treatment. If your goal is comfort, do you need a cholesterol-lowering medication? Is that cholesterol-lowering medication helping that person with comfort? No. Not for their day-to-day lives, no. It's for their future. But if you're not looking toward their future, consider, do you want medications that are there to prevent for the future when the patient may just want comfort care at the moment?
What are we really talking about here in terms of comfort care? Are we talking about keeping, so if a patient or their family decide that, you know, we don't want our, you know, our loved one going through any more of this type of pain only to result in, you know, XYZ outcome. We just want them to have comfort in their process of that. Is this what we're talking about? Comfort in the process?
Yes.
Of,
let me give you an example. Yeah. In the nursing home, there was a patient with severe Alzheimer's disease, and the daughter just said, keep mommy comfortable. And the patient had very significant high blood pressure, and the daughter enrolled the patient in our palliative care program and said, and we went through every medicine she was on, including blood pressure medicine. And the daughter said, you know what? The blood pressure medicine is not, the high blood pressure is not affecting mom. Take her off the blood pressure medicine. It's we only want for comfort. And so we took her off all her medicines because she was comfortable. You know, she was just laid there. You know, whatever, she didn't recognize the daughter. And the daughter decided no medication at all. And you would think, well, maybe the patient would die sooner. You know what? She was alive for years and years later.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's a fascinating story. And I'm really, I want to remind the audience of your website. It's GailMD.com, GailMD.com. And if you go on there, you will see numerous case studies that Gail has presented about the use of holistic practices in the care of our elders, and it's quite fascinating. And Gail, I really appreciate your joining us today and sharing these incredible stories. And you know, I feel like I need a consultation with you because I want to lose 30 pounds the way you did. I think after you treated your, I think you made some dietary changes and lifestyle changes. And I was just so inspired by your story as well as the story of many of your patients. Let's talk about caregivers. You know, ecarediary.com is a website devoted to family caregivers of the aging. How can caregivers incorporate holistic principles when they deal with day-to-day challenges?
Well, for starters, caregivers have to take care of themselves because they're of no use to their loved one if they're not well. So the concept is take control of what you think and what you eat. The eating part is actually easier. It's more important what you put in your head than what you put in your body. But I'll start with what you eat. So many of us have a lot of stress. And when we have stress, if many of your audience, they may have heard of a medication called prednisone. It's a steroid. It's a corticosteroid or cortisol, which is a stress hormone. Cortisol is produced by the body by the adrenal glands, and it makes a stress hormone. And that's pretty much what prednisone is. And prednisone has a lot of possible side effects, including truncal obesity, means you get fat around the waist. And if you think about it, when you are stressed, you get fat around the waist, around abdominal obesity. And that's a sign that you are stressed. And you may not sleep well. Cortisol, when you're chronically stressed, and caregivers would tend to be chronically stressed, their cortisol, their stress hormone, is fight and flight. And if you're chronically stressed, you're always fighting and flighting. But when you should be resting, you don't want to be fighting and flighting. But that's why some people don't sleep well, because the cortisol is surging at inappropriate times, such as at night. So step one, take care of what you think and what you eat. So the eating part, so many of us have something called yeast or candida, which is, many people heard of candida because you have like a vaginal yeast infection, but the candida can be inside the body also. And this is something Western medicine does not talk about. This is strictly alternative holistic medicine where they talk about the yeast syndrome. And they say 8 out of 10 people have this. If you've had a high-stress life, if you've been on a lot of antibiotics in your lifetime, hypothyroidism, diabetes, birth control pills, steroid use, and a lot of, in your lifetime having consumed lots of sugars, then odds are you have some degree of yeast. And so what's so effective is going on an anti-yeast diet. And basically what that means is no sugars and nothing that turns into sugar, and that includes fruit. Let's say that again. As much as fruit has a lot of health benefits, it still turns into sugar. What is a baked potato? It's a lump of sugar. In your body, that lump of that turn. What is a slice of bread? A slice of sugar. It turns into sugar in your body. And doesn't everyone love sugar? So does the yeast. So does every bacteria, every virus, every fungus, every parasite, every organism, including ourselves. We love things that turn into sugar. And yet, so much of what we eat are carbohydrates because those are comfort foods. Why are they comfort foods? When you eat the grains, the wheat in particular, it causes the body to make these substances which are similar to morphine. They make us feel good, like morphine would make you feel good. And so that's why we crave it. But these are the foods that are feeding the yeast. And so for me, my journey, I was always overweight. I was born at 9 pounds. I had a weight problem my entire life. I ended up losing 30 pounds, keeping it off, following the anti-candida or anti-yeast food plan, and the weight just fell off of me because I was no longer feeding the yeast that was within me. And so it was like a miracle. I no longer craved the sweets, and this has been now since 2006. It's been now 6 years that I've kept the weight off. When in the past I would yo-yo, Weight Watchers, Overeaters Anonymous. I mean, I had a weight problem.
Right.
And now
this is so fascinating. You know, how does one find out if they have yeast in their system?
I suspect I do too.
I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking about some of the things you said. And
well, there are tests, alternative medicine tests, that are pricey, and I don't bother with them. I just go with the risk factors. If you have those risk factors, you go on this food plan, and you could even, you know, go online and find, you know, yeast, anti-yeast food plan. Follow the food plan for 3 weeks, and at the end of 3 weeks, I give my patients a questionnaire of symptoms so that they get a numerical score at baseline. I put them on the food plan for 3 weeks. You follow it rigorously. The end of 3 weeks, you fill out the food plan, you fill out the questionnaire again, and you will know that your symptoms have totally improved. We forget what our symptoms are once they disappear. So it's important to have a record of what your symptoms are.
Right.
Okay, then after 3 weeks, you now have cleaned out your body. Now you can take one of the foods you previously were not allowed on the food plan and reintroduce it. And if the symptoms come back, you can't have it. If they don't come back, you can have it. So that's how we individualize the food plan. So it's not one size fits all.
You know, thank you for sharing this because we on this show, we've had so many different guests and give caregivers on our program who listen all sorts of different ways to approach reducing the stress of caregiving. And I have to say, you are the first guest to really introduce, I think, something very new here, which is look at your diet and consider, you know, whether or not, you know, consider this whole topic of anti-candida, which I think is really fascinating. And I definitely want to learn more about it, and I encourage our listeners to visit your site again at gailmd.com, gailmd.com. Dr. Lowenstein, it has really been a pleasure having you here as our guest, and is there anything else you'd like to share in the last few minutes that we have?
I want to tell your guests about, there's a group I started in 2011 called Use Your Mind Learning Group. It's specifically for any, Use Your Mind Learning Group, I started before, I misspoke. It's Elder Life Options Group, that's the one. It's really important that they know about that. It's specifically for people, elderly people and caregivers, to educate yourselves through coming to our quarterly meetings. I have a guest speaker, and so that when the crisis occurs, you are armed with knowledge so that you're not tempted to follow the path of least resistance into hell. That's the whole purpose of the group. I started it because I give advice and people don't follow it because in the middle of the crisis, they just follow the way the doctors tell them to do it, and it may not be in their best interest.
So tell us quickly, where are your groups and when are they held?
Well, the Elder Life Options Group, we've been meeting at the Bristol of North Hills, and the next one will be coming. I schedule them when I'm ready to. The next one is not scheduled, but I'm hoping to have the topic would be home health agencies versus there's home health versus home care.
Right.
Some are licensed, some aren't. It's very complicated, and so I want to have speakers on that to teach us about the differences. Then I have Complementary Alternative Medicine Group. We meet at the Sid Jacobson JCC in Greenvale, and we just had one. We had a great chiropractor teaching us.
Correct.
And then the Use Your Mind Learning Group is in Muttontown at a private home. And the next one coming up is, I believe, going to be in September, where I'm going to have a chef teach us how to cook using the anti-candida food plan.
Fantastic. Dr. Lewinstein, thank you so much for joining us, and we'd love to have you back because I'm sure there's so much more to learn. I want to thank our audience for tuning in. Join us next week on Tuesday, August 14th at 2 p.m. Thank you again, and thank you, Dr. Lewinstein.
My pleasure.